Mike Clemens now joining us. Michael, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Bill.
So, first of all, thanks for understanding. I'm sorry I left you high and dry and left you without a ride on Sunday, man.
Billy, it's good to have you back today, considering the circumstances. And all of this feels very bad for your family, for Sherry's family. We certainly understand.
Which I appreciate. Thanks so much. And I know she really appreciates the support as well. So, Mike, was this to you, after witnessing that game up close and personal on Sunday, was this shocking?
No, I there was a moment there, the game had been over, the locker rooms had been closed, and some of the TV crews from Milwaukee and the other people that have to drive back to Wausau and La Crosse and, across the state, they were kind of like, that was really a bad game, and this is really a down locker room, and Mike McCarthy's last statement in his post-game press conference is, I don't know what the hell to do after this, I've never been in this position. Gee, you think they would fire him now? And some of the senior writers said, nah, I give that 10%. He's probably done at the end of the year. But, yeah, now that they're, just about completely out of the playoff contention, they wouldn't fire him here. And as those people were having that conversation, decide whether to get in the trucks and start driving home, Mike McCarthy indeed was being fired. But, we knew, I told you, from what I'd seen during training camp, and then when we got to week five, that game in Detroit was horrible. They just didn't look prepared. And then they almost got beat by Kyle Shanahan with a backup quarterback at Lambeau, 33-30. And you think about, here you are going into week 13, and you've only got four wins, and which one's your signature win? Aaron Rodgers coming back out of the tunnel and lighting up the Bears? You have not put together four quarters of anything all this year. There's no identity. And I think Mike McCarthy is acted like a, remember last January after Ted was demoted and put to the side, and now Ted, by the way, he's living back in Texas. He's no longer
right
at 1265. Mike McCarthy came out with that strong statement and said, I need to do everything I can to get us back to the Super Bowl, to show the speech that he's got to give to the staff, to Mark Murphy, to the fans, to the media, that, listen, I just had to get rid of guys like Edgar Bennett and Alex Van Pelt and Dom Capers. Dom Capers, who, did things to invent defenses 25, 30 years ago with the Steel Curtain and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I just had to fire that guy, and that shows how desperate we are to try and fix this thing in Green Bay. As the year went on, I think he understood that Brian Gutekunst was reporting to Mark Murphy on what coaching was doing. And he felt a little out of it during the draft. But back in the mini camps and OTAs, him and Goody were there working every day on the fields, and Gutekunst was responding much quicker at picking up guys when guys were going down, and you saw that through the season as well. But then when Ty Montgomery got shipped out after fumbling the ball, and when the coaches all, to a man, said, yeah, we were in meetings when we found out that Ha-Ha Clinton Dix had just been traded, there was a separation there. The personnel was taking over and saying, we're thinking about 2019. We don't like – there's no identity being formed here by these coaches. Joe Philbin was brought back as an offensive coordinator to replace Edgar, and he was here during the good days when they won a Super Bowl and then just had one of the best offenses ever when they go 15-1 in 2011. That's how he got a job with the Miami Dolphins. And Joe was asked when he first came back last spring, so why are you back as a head coach? Why aren't you holding off for another head coaching job? And he says, I'm back here to help my friend Mike McCarthy look like the smartest coach in the NFL. I know what that needs now. Now, having reached, after 25 years as an offensive line and offense coordinator, I made it to my goal, head coach of the Dolphins. He walked into a swamp down there. But now I'm back here in Green Bay to help Mike, and I know what it takes for a head coach to succeed. Instead, they had this horrible game by both teams. It was 2017. It should have been 9-6 in that slop. And Joe Philbin was asked, so how did you find out that McCarthy had been fired and that you were going to be named interim head coach?
I was in the locker room and just, check with all the players after the game like I always do. And then, Brian grabbed me and said that they, Mark wanted to see me. And so went up to my office and, then visited with Mark. And, then talked to Mike and, you know, and it's been tough. I mean, I haven't slept very much. You know, you come back here and you, you know, you want to be part of the solution. You want to help a guy that has been a great man. He's been a great coach. He's been a friend. And, you know, you feel like you let him down. So it's, yeah, it's been busy. It's been, you know, and you know, I told the team, you know, he's, I mean, what he's done here speaks up for itself. And, you know, I know how he feels, you know, and I've been through it. It's not fun.
So Mike McCarthy, you know, Al, Joe Philbin, like he said, trying to be part of the solution, but you could hear his voice, you know, waver a little bit to where it's tough. I mean, that's his friend. That's not just another head coach he's working for. That's his friend.
No, they, you know, these jobs mean a lot to these guys. Labor Day weekend, Bill, it's kind of relaxed setting. We're sitting around talking to McCarthy, and the defense did not look good against what turned out to be a great Chiefs offense in that preseason game. And I had found out that McCarthy, this is weird. I mean, you know, they talk about these things being business trips, and you're trying to get this team together. And, you know, you haven't had your offensive line have a single snap on the field during preseason games because of injury. And I thought he had belly problems. And Mike McCarthy, though, when they landed in Kansas City, he got in a car and he drove out to the Baker University community where he'd gone to college, played tight end. You know, that, to me, that was a, that smelled a little bit like, you know, last hurrah, you know, final tour. I don't know. I mean, I know guys go out and meet with friends when they're in town and they're on the road for these games. But I asked McCarthy, why do you go back to see his old buddies at Baker University during that weekend at the Chiefs?
Well, Baker University, how'd you know I was at Baker University?
They sent an RLTV broadcast.
Oh, did Kevin? All right. But, no, that's great. It's good for Baker. It's no, it was great to go back there. I mean, it was nice, you know, nice to meet with, you know, old friends. You know, Mike Grossinger, head coach here, is a good friend of mine, and, you know, had a chance to spend some time with, you know, our president and her husband and the AD. So it was a fun, you know, 3 hours, and just to, you know, check in on those guys.
You know, I mean, I don't know about the last hurrah, but certainly it sounded like it was, you know, he's kind of making a tour on some memories. You know what I mean?
Well, a little bit of a farewell tour, maybe putting things in perspective. And then I said to him, you know, when he first arrived in Green Bay, someone said, you know, is there a coach at GM? And he said, yeah, Chuck Knoll, the guy who ran the Pittsburgh Steelers from 1969 to 1991, 22 years. And he got 4 Super Bowl wins with Terry Bradshaw and the Steel Curtain, Matt Crowd, in the 1970s. The last one that he won was in 80. I mean, Chuck Knoll won 11 years and never won another Super Bowl. Maybe he stayed too long. I don't know, 22 years. But Chuck Knoll, and there's, you know, there's one of these NFL football life things on the network there. And it talks about how Knoll was such a teacher that nobody knew Chuck Knoll much. He always put the players out front. Nobody knew much about the guy. And Mike McCarthy has always said that, too. This is about the players. It's not about me. You're not coming to my house with the cameras and doing up-close and personal stories. But I asked him, why did he ever get a chance to meet Chuck Knoll, and why did he emulate him?
Chuck Knoll, yeah, I think just as, you know, you look back on being a kid in the 70s and 80s and watching the Steelers play and perform, you know, he had a distinct relationship with his players, but you could just see, you know, that he, you know, just from the, you know, from a young man's perspective, it was, you know, just more of a fan. But I think once you get into coaching, and I just had the opportunity to be around Coach Knoll in a very brief setting. My first year at University of Pittsburgh, going up to Latrobe to the training camp, and, you know, have a chance to sit down, and he was in the coach's lounge, and he was teaching the technique of taking on a cut block for a defensive back, and it was different than I'd ever heard before. But, you know, just the biomechanics and how, you know, just the way he was teaching it was really interesting. But he was such a, you know, he had such presence, and obviously for, you know, I think anybody that grew up there was probably even more magnified. But, you know, he was a teacher, and you could just tell through his, you know, his history there and the experience, and particularly when you get to see, I think it was the NFL or 30 on 30. I know there was a special that was done on him. I really enjoyed that, and particularly when the players talked about him, because you never knew that as a fan. He was very private, and you know, he wasn't out there as far as, you know, those are things you learn more after the fact. But just, you know, from a coach's perspective, I mean, I always admired the way he went about his business because he always made it about the players. It was never about him.
McCarthy's an up-tempo guy. He prided himself in knowing every coaching position, every technique, so that he could critique those with his coaching staff and instruct, here's what I want to see out of your guys at your position, et cetera. You know, very much like Belichick. No one can figure out how Belichick does what he does, except maybe because he's got more control of his roster and he can change out guys or take risks on guys like Josh Gordon, who's running past your Rashad Breeland for a touchdown in that game against the Patriots, or Aaron Jones dropping a ball on the ground. Everyone's blaming Rodgers for some of these weird balls in the dirt on third down, and those are questionable. But plenty of guys, including everybody on special teams, has got a penalty or something that screwed up this season. But you get back to McCarthy, and it's this. I remember that Wednesday he said, you know what, we're giving the guys off, because my GPS readings say that these guys are a little bit burned out. And when he kept on talking about the GPS, to all the fans that say, gosh, the Packers, they got more injuries than anybody. No, they don't. Talk to Jay Gruden. The Redskins have not lost one but two quarterbacks to broken legs in the last month. It happens. It's the NFL. McCarthy's answer for injuries was put a GPS in on these guys and constantly monitor their energy levels because of their fatigue. That's when injuries go up. But that's his way of doing it. I think it got in the way of football. I think it got in the way, like, you know, when Ron Wolf arrived in Green Bay 26 years ago, and he came back to Bob Harlan and said, this Lindy Infante, the guy who ended up going like 4-12 in his final season, these practices suck. Nothing's getting done. These guys aren't ready for a game. I'm concerned that maybe these Packers have not been getting ready for games this year because they worry more about the GPS than more about the X's and O's and if, you know, you're ready for the game.
Yeah, I mean, this is adversity reveals character, so it's going to reveal a lot about our team and the kind of guys that we have. Like I said yesterday, this is about pride at this point and fishing out things the right way. And, you know, trying to start something, building towards the future. But it'll say a lot about the kind of guys we have, how we respond in the next 4 weeks.
Welcome back! Bill Michaels Show continues on. Hopefully you're enjoying your day today. We certainly appreciate you hanging out with us. This portion of the program, by the way, brought to you by our friends at Cousin Subs. And Cousin Subs right now reminding you, you can get yourself a gift card. You're going to be out and about doing some holiday shopping. Maybe you've got that person that's hard to buy for. Give them the gift of comfort and food and fun. And that is our friends from Cousins. Just stop in. $25 gift card. We'll also earn you a free 7.5-inch sub. Not bad. So you get the gift that keeps on giving, and one for yourself as well, one for the road, so to speak. So stop in any participating Cousin Subs. Download the app on your mobile device. You go to CousinSubs.com, and they are the official sub sandwich of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Good stuff right there. Mike Clemens from NFL Sirius Radio, our Green and Gold Insider, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. And Mike, as we continue on, you heard Aaron right there talking about Mike and the situation now. You kind of move forward and you say, okay, you know, what's next? What's going on next? You know what I mean?
Well, in four games, and are you going to play for pride? Are you going to play to earn a job, you know, with this team next year or somewhere else? Those determinations will be made. They're not going to tank. They're not going to do what the Raiders did. They're going to try and compete. I think it would probably be smart, though, if they try some players out and start thinking about next year. The game ends Sunday night. Mason Crosby misses the field goal. Now, when you're on the road, we sit with the front office, like at the Coliseum in L.A. They were all right on, you know, right over my shoulder. Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst and John Eric Sullivan, the director of college scouting, and the contract guy, finance vice president Russ Ball, the rest of the staff. And when Ty Montgomery fumbles that ball, you know, they're banging on the tables. You know, and they try not to be too emotional like that because they know everybody's, you know, watching them that's in the media. But, you know, they're disappointed. They're disappointed. So Mason misses that field goal the other night, and I'm taking the catwalk that goes from the press box back down to the locker rooms. And up ahead of me, about 15 paces, is Russ Ball. And he's just looking forward and trying to walk as fast as he can. They're trying to get down to the locker room for their post-game gathering. And Brian and Goody's smiling. and he's kind of ribbing Russ Ball and smiling. Now, I have no idea what they're talking about. But I would think after a horrible game like that, they would be dismayed or whatever. We kind of now know that by the end of the third quarter, Mark Murphy said, okay, plan A, this is it. We're done. We're going to execute this after the game. So he knew what was going on. So, you know, I don't know, sense of relief, or you just take that for what it's worth. That, you know, we want to talk about body language of the players. There's body language of the front office. Yesterday, I think this team is going to try and hire, like they've done in the past, a younger guy that's got NFL experience that's ready to ascend to be head coach, maybe for the first time. I think that would probably be the best way to move. Like Ron Wolf hiring a quarterback's offensive coordinator guy from the 49ers named Mike Holmgren. Like Ted Thompson hiring a offensive coordinator from the Saints and then from the 49ers and Mike McCarthy. But the thing about both those guys, it took Holmgren and Mike McCarthy 5 years before they won a title. And so I asked Mark Murphy, did you factor that when you made this decision to get rid of your veteran coach?
Well, you know, I would say, you know, I've been around the league a long time. Brian has. Things can change quickly. And I would say this about Brian. You know, we've had one of Brian's drafts, and all one offseason of the changes that he's made to the roster, I'm very optimistic. You know, I think with the way we positioned ourselves for the draft this next year that we can make a big change quickly. You know, I look at New Orleans, 3-7-9 years in a row, and then hit on a big draft, and you can make a change. And so, the expectations are high here. We want to win. I guess, you know, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Brian.
I think this decision was about changing our course more than anything, and we just felt like it was time to change the course.
He brings Brian into it. It certainly sounds like it was Mark Murphy's decision for the most part, where he had kind of decided, okay, to run its course. But that's the term, Mike. It just ran its course. It was when Mike McCarthy said a couple of years ago, firing assistants, sometimes you just need a new voice. That's what this is, right?
Bill Walsh, who won on those Super Bowls with the 49ers, says you probably shouldn't be a head coach in the NFL in the same spot for more than about 8 to 10 years. You know, Vince Lombardi, his name's on the trophy. He was in Green Bay for 9. He had a lot of productivity, though. He won 5 championships.
Mm-hmm.
But and you kept on waiting since 2010 for this thing to repeat, and you've got all those kinds of scenarios that happen. And I think it's like Michael Silver said earlier on the show today from NFL Network, stale is the word. You know, it's not so much fighting. It's stale. It just grows stale. I asked Aaron Rodgers the same thing, Bill. I said, so here you are. You just turned 35. It took those other guys 5 years to get a title. You get some 42-year-old first-time NFL head coaching year. Are you ready to wait 4 to 5 years before you get there?
I mean, I'm old, so I'm not involved. You know, I'm not excited about a rebuild, but I don't think that's the direction we're going. I think we have a lot of pieces in place. We just got to make them fit perfectly and start to play better in all phases. I think Brian's committed to winning now, and Mark is committed to winning now, and you've seen it other places. They've been able to turn things around in a year. I mean, obviously Philly, a couple years to win a championship, and what LA's been doing. I mean, it's definitely doable in this day and age. You just got to bring the pieces together and get guys gelling on the same page.
So they think they're like the Eagles, where Doug Peterson come in and turn around in 2 years. They think they're like LA, where a Sean McVay can pick up the mess from Jeff Fisher and turn around and have the best league in the NFL right now. McVay hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. Looks pretty good. I've been talking about this guy since the combine. He's got all the markings of the next great one at only 32 years old, but he's still got to get into the NFL postseason. We see where it goes. I agree with you, too. You know, Tom Silverstein wrote a great column a week ago, last Sunday, where he said, listen, has this franchise not learned its lesson? Bob Harlan made the brilliant decision to say, take this away from those guys that sit on the board of directors that, you know, run paper mills and law firms up in Green Bay, and they were saying, well, bring back Bart. Fresh start with Bart Starr. Or how about bring back Forrest Gregg? Hey, look, he coached the Bengals. You know, or how about this Lindy Infante? No, get a football guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ron Wolf to run this thing, like Ted Thompson to run this thing. Let a football guy run football, and we worry about marketing and revenue and overseeing the product for the fan. But Mark Murphy makes a pretty good case. I'm a football guy. I played 8 years for the Redskins. I've hired and fired coaches for 17 years as an athletic director. I think the best thing for the franchise is me to have the final say with a lot of input from Gutekunst as to what the direction of the team is going to be. But God, please don't hire Jim Harbaugh. Oh, my God. I've told you this 100 times before in the car, Bill. The reason the 49ers didn't win that Super Bowl trophy is him and Kaepernick blew it. They kept on trying to force that ball to Michael Crabtree with Randy Moss, 6'5", in the back of the end zone, wide open, saying, I'm here. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they lost to the Ravens.
Well, you know what? Like I said, he's a white-hot comet. He comes in, does things really well, and then just wears on you.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I mean, you know, he started butting heads with their personnel department, and when the ownership wasn't going to back up the coach, that's when he said, all right, see ya. Well, you know, I'll go to Michigan.
Right. Right, no doubt about it. Good stuff as always, Mike. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks, Bill.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later. There you go. That is Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold Insider, joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard, they treat you fair. 80-plus years they've been getting it done. Call them, 844-PRIDE, or go to schneiderjobs.com, 844-PRIDE, or go to schneiderjobs.com.